Hello, beloved listeners. Welcome to another Advanced Living Radio program. My name is Kenneth Lesser, your host, and just thrilled and delighted to be with you to have some fun as we make life easier and better for you. Now, today, I'm just wondering how many of you out there have ever thought about that you may have more of your potential that you could want to reach, and that you might be living just a little bit below, or for some of us, like myself, far below my potential. And it's not because we're lazy or disinterested, but our guest today is going to help us to understand that most of that falling short is due to the hard wiring of our brains. Yes, and of course we look at top athletes, top performers, and one of the things that we look at them and highly successful business people, and those folks know that peak performance is 99% mental. Okay, now that's not the same as the British going mental, okay? This is different. This is where we're going to have fun getting our brains and that mental aspect of our being aligned for success. And our guest today, Dr. Adrienne Ahern, top athletes have turned to her. Peak performers in business have turned to her. Why? Because this hardwiring means that our brains have been conditioned with specific attitudes and patterns that cause us to respond in certain ways. And this conditioning is, yes, unconscious. We're not directly thinking about it, but it is there. As she speaks about it, it is hardwired into our brains, our very physiology. And its messages are often negative or limiting. If it wasn't, we'd be doing better, right? Of course. Well, get ready for some fun today. A wonderful four-step program to inner joy and better performance. And our guest today, Dr. Adrienne Ahern, is a peak performance psychologist and author of the new book, Snap Out of It Now. Not later, but now. And Dr. Ahern works, yes, with top athletes. Oh, my gosh, if you get her book and you look in there, you'll see Tamika Catchings, Olympic gold medalist in women's basketball, is writing in there about her. I mean, we've got top people, athletes, CEOs, and others that are seeking excellence to get the hardwiring of their brains to work for them, not against them. So she's here to help us achieve our goals. And her innovative methods, including neurofeedback, can be applied in all areas of our life. Yes, lowering a golf score to better sex. And, of course, we want to make sure that you know the difference between those two. Now, Dr. Ahern says that by making our unconscious conditioning conscious, in other words, taking control of this process, we can reach true peak performance at work, in relationships, and in life. I am so excited, and I know you're going to have some fun along with me as we welcome Dr. Adrienne Ahern. Hello, hello, welcome.
Hello, Ken. It's great to be here. Wow, what an incredible introduction that you've given me.
Well, thank you. It's just exciting to have the quality of work and effort that you've put in 15 plus years of study
yes.
to bring this here to us. And now, of course, we mentioned a term about hardwired. So, help go into that a little bit about our thoughts hardwired into our brain.
Well, good. Yes, I will definitely. Because you know what? I'm a psychologist, as you said, and I'm also a woman who has grown up and struggled with her own problems, with her own thinking and patterning that is a part of our human nature, or part of our conditioning or programming, if you will. Now, what I've discovered because of my own, one of the things I always do is whenever I find a possible strategy, I use it on myself first and see if it works, and then work on it with my client. And try to develop it and really do the research in it, sort of one-on-one case with my clinical practice. So what I've discovered is that our conditioning, our thinking has, well, I haven't just discovered this. I'm not going to take total credit for it, but it's hardwired in. You know, the more and more, the brain is like a muscle, like any other muscle. It works upon repetition, upon strengthening. The more and more we think a thought, the more we're hardwiring it in. And the good news is that it's all about the hardwiring, as I say in my talks. But the bad news is that it's all about the hardwiring. And so what I mean by that is that if a thought or fear is hardwired in, no amount of effort is going to convince you, or rationalizing is going to convince you out of that thought. And no amount of effort will offset the reactions that thought causes, a fear or a negative attitude.
Okay. So willpower won't do it, huh?
Willpower, you know, willpower is good because it keeps us wanting to face it. But we have to face it, Ken, before we can replace it. You know, I talk about, you know, one of the things that I say, and people have found interesting, is that I say, you have to face it or you get chased by it. Because a lot of times we think our thoughts are truth, you know, that we don't realize that they've simply been programmed and hardwired into our heads. And when we can acknowledge that, and that's the basis of Snap Out of It Now, the basis is that we can recognize that our thoughts have been conditioned and programmed and wired into our brains. When we can recognize that, then we have the ability to see that we can rewire those thoughts. We could acknowledge them, release them, and plug in some new neural pathways of thoughts, patterns, and behaviors.
Wow. Wow. Well, this is excellent. So now we know that stuff that got hardwired in, if we're not performing as well as we want, or if we're having some real problems or issues, then it's likely to be because we've got some undesirable hardwiring in there, programming.
Yes. You bet. You know, I work with, I started out as a clinical psychologist, you know, working with all kinds of very difficult populations, you know, very severely mentally ill people. I've worked with addictions. I've worked with family problems, couples, and alcohol problems. And I have come to working now with people who want to perform better. And the difference there is that I think everybody wants to be a peak performer. I mean, that's everybody wants to perform excellent at what their path is in life. The reason why I work with peak performers is that they tend to see that they're capable of working on some of the issues that arise in their life. They see things as barriers instead of problems that have existed forever. They see things as they need to look at what is setting them back, what's holding them back, rather than what is my problem that I want to overcome. And there's a different mentality in that. And the reason why I say I work with peak performers and I speak to corporations who want to get that competitive edge is because when you have that attitude to begin with, you're halfway there. You're willing to face almost anything it is that's getting in your way. And that is really the most difficult step, is facing it. We tend to run from it. We're not taught as children and young adults and adults to really turn around and face the issue that is in the way. If we have a problem with our boss, we tend to avoid it, avoid that we might need to learn how to communicate more honestly or more forcefully or more, or whatever it takes.
Wow.
So it's really about facing what is it that we're frightened of, what is it that we're resisting, and that itself can take us to the place of making it happen for ourselves, taking us to the next level.
Huh, this is amazing. You know, one of the things that I'm sure you're aware of, and I want to point this out for my listeners, because I just had a light bulb go on. You were talking a little bit about people kind of in the peak performance arena, whether it's athletics or peak performers in business, they tend to be more open to facing an issue, to being able to go, okay, I got a problem here, I want to solve it. And yet for many people, they're in some form of denial, or there's been a climate set up in which they have to be okay. Are you having any problems? No, I'm just fine. Everything's fine.
Right.
I'm standing in a pool of blood, but it's not my blood. Actually... there's massive denial going on. Well, the big aha that I get is that with what you're doing and helping people to get past this and helping them to be able to face issues is that when you're working with top performers, especially in business, that's going to mean that it's opening a door for them and their other people in their businesses to be able to be honest about what's going on for them. You are literally pioneering, opening a huge door so that people can step out of denial and find that it's safe to do that in a business climate instead of risking losing their jobs. That's
right.
Huge.
It is huge, and I want to be very careful to say that it's not something that you can just because we should not be in denial, and we should say when someone says, how are you doing, if there's something wrong, we should be able to say it openly and honestly. But there still are dynamics and politics in the workplace. There still is a finesse and a way of being diplomatic. Because when somebody, when you walk through the door in the morning of your workplace, your boss wants to see you optimistic, eager to perform. And so if you've had a problem with your spouse and you've just had a fight over the kids, who's going to pick up the kids after work, that's not appropriate in that moment to share that. But so we have to be aware of what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. Now, it's not appropriate for you to deny that there's a problem, but it may it's appropriate to acknowledge that I'm having a problem with my husband, and we're going to need to resolve this. But the appropriateness is not to bring that into the workplace.
Okay,
you
doesn't have
saying?
To be dragging it in there. Now, you've written this new book.
Yes.
Snap out of it now. Okay.
Right.
Now, what I'm wondering, because for many listeners, when we hear that you're working with top CEOs and top athletes, obviously you're a very busy woman and would command some high fees. I'm wondering, for the average person in your book, how far can they go by getting your book in terms of using your techniques?
Well, you know what, a good question, and thank you for asking it, Ken. I wrote the book with the intention of it being a guide in itself, that with the practical steps. You know, I think we make things too complex when we're trying to solve problems. I take people and teach them that in order to stop it at reaction, now that reaction might be an explosive bout of anger towards your coworker. That reaction may be emotional overeating, or it may be that we clam up when our boss asks us to take on a new project. You know, whatever that reaction that we have within us, and each of us will know what that is for us, or can become aware of that. I teach them how to deal with that reaction, how to work with it so that you take control of it rather than it being in control of you. And I think that's the freedom that I'm hoping to convey to people when they read the book. It's not a book that's going to change your life in a second. It's a book that's going to guide you through how to make your life yours and how to take control of those automatic reactions, like I mentioned before, that are keeping you stuck in a place that you don't want to be. You know, I've not only worked with peak performers in the workplace. You know, I speak to a lot of companies in helping their sales team become more motivated, more eager, more capable of listening better to their customers so they can close those deals a little bit more successfully and frequently. But I also work with women who have a low level, you know, who have been conditioned to view themselves as I don't want to say inferior, but less superior, I guess, than maybe their male counterparts. And that is simply a belief system that has been programmed into many of the women through our cultural expectations. And so I work with them. I work with people that have a difficulty with reaching for, say, too much alcohol or too much sweets or food to protect themselves, to sort of feed their cells so that their stress doesn't eat them up. And unfortunately, it's a feeding frenzy, and pardon the pun there.
Oh.
But I think we need to take control, and people want to take control. And I'm trying to help them see that they can by becoming more aware of what they're feeling within their body.
Wow. Wow. So I guess it sounds like one of the first steps is becoming aware. And I know that your chapter here, number one, talks about that we've become conditioned to be unaware.
Yeah, I think we have. I think that, the biggest piece of me is that I believe that each one of us, we're doing the best we can with what we have. Now, when we reach for alcohol, or when we reach and we yell at a colleague or a spouse or our child, I don't think we're doing that consciously, and I don't believe we're doing that because we want to hurt anyone else. I think we're doing that because we don't know how to deal with the overwhelming feelings that we're experiencing within our body. And that is the result of our conditioning. When we were children, our parents didn't come to us when we were angry and say, "Wow, you're experiencing anger." You know, what they did was they put us in our room, or they spanked us, or they punished us in some way for our inappropriate behavior. But anger is as natural a feeling as joy and love. It's just what we do with it, and when we're not allowed to feel it, that makes it inappropriate. Do you hear what I'm trying to say there?
Oh, gosh, that's so important. In other words, instead of denying it, to one, be able to recognize and differentiate feelings, and then on top of that, to be able to not be stuck in them.
Exactly.
And one of the things that has come up is sometimes if someone is having what we might call challenges or behavioral problems, they're given good advice, and how frustrating that can be to get good advice and not be able to implement it, which I think is you're here to bridge that gap for us.
You know, I love that, Ken. Thank you. You're a great host, because a lot of people don't get what I'm trying to say, because you're right. People get good advice all the time, and the folks that take it and can't, and when they're not able to actualize it, they feel like failures themselves. And the reason why we're not able to stop and not say a word when someone's screaming at us is because we're the feelings that are activated in our body are absolutely overwhelming, and we're in the reaction that usually is coupled with that feeling has been conditioned, and it's unconscious. We react automatically without thinking. So that's really, Step Out of It Now is really about bringing ourselves back to an awareness of what's going on within us, so that we can not only acknowledge our feelings, but also nurture ourselves for those feelings. Because those feelings aren't arising because we're bad people or that we've done something wrong. Often they arise because we're human beings and we just don't know what to do with those feelings.
Oh, wow, okay. And I know, as an example, I've seen some people that when they're angry, I mean, they are, like, way off the chart in terms of yelling and screaming and jumping up and down and making possibly, you know, threatening gestures. Some can lead to physical violence. And then I've seen other people that who knows, they may be using some of your techniques, because what I noticed is that they made mention about something happened and they said, I'm feeling angry about this, and yet it was said in a matter-of-fact tone.
Yes. You know, I often teach my clients to do that because when they people don't realize they can say, they can acknowledge how they're feeling. They can say, I am angry, and that's okay, because they're owning the anger. They're not putting it out there like it's the other person's fault. And I got a great story for, with regard to that particular issue, Ken.
Yeah.
I have a client. She was 74 years old at the time. This is like 5 years ago. But I was just writing, you know, this is the beginning of writing my book, and I was getting into trying to identify the feelings in the body and trying to articulate that. Well, this woman came to me and she says, I feel like I'm becoming an angry old woman. When I go to family events, everybody, something happens, and I don't know what happens, but suddenly everybody's mad at me. And so we talked about it, and I said, well, it sounds like in these stories that you're angry. And she goes, I don't think I'm angry. I mean, I really don't think I am. And so we worked on this, and what I helped her understand is that she was indeed angry at her daughter-in-law and son-in-laws, that she wasn't acknowledging, that certain things they would do or say, and she wasn't acknowledging that it made her angry, but she would say things in response to that, and it would provoke an argument and a fight between people, and they'd all identify her as the problem. So she goes, I don't care what I have to do. I don't want to be identified as the angry old woman. So could you help me with this? So we practiced just simply becoming aware of the sensation of anger within her body and then breathing with a focus to that sensation.
Wow.
She came in one day and she said, Adrienne, I cannot believe what happened this week. I was sitting in my television room with my grandson, and we were just watching the news, and something came on the news that was a little controversial, and I made a comment about the person on the news, and I don't remember what the comment was, but she says, immediately, my grandson said to me, oh, that's so stupid, Grandma. And she says, she sat there, and she goes, okay, this isn't I have to do what Adrienne said. And she says, I thought I was either having a heart attack or I was experiencing anger for the first time, because I had this overwhelming sensation in my chest, and then I thought, okay, breathe. And she started breathing silently and with a focus on her chest area. She says after a couple of moments, the sensation dissipated, just disappeared. And she says, oh, my God, I don't feel angry anymore. And in that moment, where there was nothing said, her grandson said, oh, I'm so sorry, Grandma. That was really rude of me. And the cool thing here is that there's two things that happen. Number one, this client of mine didn't realize, she said, in the past, what I would have done is jumped up out of my seat and accused him of being so rude to me. We would have had an argument, and it may have been an argument that wouldn't have resolved for a couple of weeks, possibly. But when I was able to breathe through my anger and recognize that I had control over it, and once I didn't feel angry anymore, I could just sit in the chair. I wasn't angry. And in that moment, in that silence, my grandchild could hear himself in his own remark, and he apologized. And she says that was the first time she was able to alter a situation like that. And it's just amazing, the ability to just to experience that feeling and take control over it.
Oh,
doesn't
how
that
gratifying.
Sound, I mean, I love that story. It's just wonderful when you think about it. We do have an ability to take control with awareness. You know, I often say once we become aware of something, we have control over it. We become more powerful than what we've become aware of.
Yes. Now, you had mentioned in that process one of the things that when she recognized that she did some breathing, and I'm guessing that it might have been different than regular breathing. Could you, you have some special things to share in that area, don't you?
I do. I have several CDs, by the way. One of my CDs that I have on my website, which, by the way, is snapoutofitnow.com.
Ah.
I have a breathing CD called How to Breathe Your Way Through Stress, Anxiety, and Anger. And that CD was based upon this experience, you know, and many more with clients where they could, you know, a lot of people don't even know when they're experiencing anger. So that is one CD, and then I also have a CD for athletes, so that is called Beyond Breathing, that I take them a little bit more into more of a breathing that you can use to get yourself into the zone before a athletic endeavor. But basically, the first thing I teach everyone, and I didn't even know, after I wrote the book, Ken, I didn't know that I had to do this. I really thought most people knew how to breathe. What I discovered was very few of us know how to breathe properly. In fact, most of us hold our breath when we're concentrating, and therefore we're not giving ourselves the full capacity of our mental ability because we're not getting oxygen to the different various our brains and the different parts of our body. So belly breathing is just a simple way of filling your three lobes of the lung, and when you fill your lungs, your lungs press the diaphragm down and your belly rises. Now, one of the things I always teach people, and this, they love this, I say, if you have a baby in your, you know, if you have a baby of your own or your nephew or niece or grandchild, watch them while they're napping. See, babies breathe naturally with their belly. And the trouble is as we grow and get into our mental capacity and we get, you know, this wonderful ability to think and strategically solve problems and all, we get away from the natural bodily functions, I mean, you know, that can heal us. And belly breathing is a wonderful way of bringing more oxygen into our bodies. And I think we all know now that oxygen is healing. And not only does it bring oxygen into all areas of the body, but it brings oxygen into the organ of our brain, so we're able to think more clearly. And just simply, when you're sitting, any listeners right now that are listening to me, put a hand on your tummy and a hand over your chest and take just a regular deep breath. And ask yourself, is my hand over my belly rising or is the hand over my chest rising? Just right there, you can identify whether you're breathing nice and fully through your belly or your chest. And if it's your chest, you just need to practice with a focus on when you inhale, you fill all three lobes of your lungs. And then it's like you can even visualize a balloon's rising. You know, you're blowing up the balloons of your lung, and that'll let your belly rise. Oh. And that's where we can take in more oxygen.
Okay.
And
lobes of our lungs. Okay.
Yeah,
and
filling
three
those
of
up
them.
Like balloons.
Okay. And so... I don't know if this would all work, but if I were filling my lungs with water, for instance, and pouring water down my throat, so to speak, that would go down to the tummy area first. Is that what we're trying to do? Is fill it from the bottom up, or?
No, this is what we're doing, and I prefer, just because of the idea of water in your lungs.
Well,
imagine
swimmers out there love that one. Okay.
When you think about it, when you inhale, you're inhaling the air, it goes right into your lungs. It actually goes into your middle lobe of your lungs first. And then as you breathe more deeply, it fills the bottom and the upper lobes. Many of us don't even know we have three lobes of our lungs.
But yes, this is
as we do that, the lungs fill up, and that the lungs itself press the diaphragm down and the belly rises. It's just some people call it diaphragmatic breathing. It's used in yoga. And what we're doing is we're filling not only our lungs with more oxygen, but we're actually allowing each of our organs and our muscles and our bones and our brain to get more oxygen.
Okay.
And it's a way to, okay, so that's just the basic belly breathing, but I often teach just one or two, there's different exercises for breathing depending upon what it is that you're trying to do. But let's say if you're, you know, last week I was giving a talk to a group of women who are just returning to the workforce after having babies. They have young children, and they're finding themselves having difficulty managing all the responsibilities, you know, of their work life, their husband, their relationship, and the children.
Oh, that could be overwhelming.
Yeah, well, one of the things I've taught them to do is just on the when they enter the workplace, just before they enter the door of their workplace, they take 3 deep breaths. Now, just taking 3 deep belly breaths does a couple of things. It clears the mind and it relaxes the body, brings the body back into a sense of balance. And you need to really clear the mind before you're transitioning from mommy into work individual, you know, professional. So you need to clear the mind of that, relax your body, and then I often ask them to say an affirmation or a mantra, something that helps them motivate themselves. Now, sometimes they need to clear a thought from their head, but that the breathing does that. The breathing clears their mind, and they relax their body, they're feeling balanced, and then they say a quick affirmation that works for them to get them focused, centered, and motivated to walk into the workplace and do their job.
Wow.
Okay, I have them do it then, and another thing that helps them is right before they enter their house after work. That's another transition where they're transitioning from the workplace back to mom and wife.
So that's and where so you walk in the door and scream, right?
Yeah, right. You'd be amazed. I mean, women are multitaskers, and one of the things I teach is that multitasking, as much as we think it's a good thing, it really diminishes our ability to truly perform at our best on any one task.
Ah.
So I really think that if, and we also, when we're multitasking, we really are only getting about 25% of what we intended done. We're not really doing exactly what we want. The more, what I teach people is to focus, clear their head, and ask themselves, what's the most important thing for me to do right now?
Okay. So in other words, focus is important. So
absolutely.
For those people that take pride in multitasking, just invite them to see if they would want to be multitasking during sex.
During sex, did you say?
Yes.
Yes, right. There you go. And you'd be amazed at how many people do.
Oh, really?
And therefore, their sex life is, one of the partners is always complaining.
Okay. Huh, so this is, I was being a little bit of a jokester about that, but,
right.
But you're helping us to realize that this goes on more than we realize.
You know, yes, and I think that it's not really, I know this, it is, I knew that you were being a little facetious there, but the reality is I think nothing is inappropriate as long as we acknowledge it and work with it. Many people do, especially in this day and age, a lot of women, a lot of men, I work more with women in this particular problem. They're thinking about what they need to do afterwards or what they have to do tomorrow or what the kids are doing or what they're going to make for dinner. You know, they're not really present. And I think that that's the key. When we're multitasking, we're not fully present and our attention is not in this moment. And I think almost everything I do, working with people to improve their sex life, working with people to improve their performance at work, working with a golfer wanting to get on the PGA Tour or a skier wanting to make the U.S. ski team, almost I think the common denominator with all of those people is to learn how to be present in this moment fully, where your focus is and attention is right on what you're doing right now. Because that is when you're able to truly perform at your best.
Ah, this is key. Now, I'm noticing something. I mean, people can go to your website, snapoutofitnow.com, and, of course, they can learn more about you. They could order your book. And one of the amazing things here, they can go onto that website, snapoutofitnow.com, and there's an area in there called Free Resources and Downloads.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. A wealth of stuff. 5 steps to rewire your brain for great sex. 5 steps to rewire your brain for more money. releasing overwhelm, releasing feelings of overwhelm. There's an e-book. There's things that you can listen to on your iPod. Ooh.
Yes. Yeah.
This is hard.
You know, there's also a tool for managing headaches. And, you know, I think that I've been doing this a while, Ken, and I've just finally decided that there's a lot of things that I would put together for a particular show. You know, when I was on the View from the Bay, I did something on multitasking. So I wanted to, and some of the things turned out to be really good and really helpful, the steps that I went through. So what I did is I'm trying to put everything that I've done that was helpful to people on this site, on this particular page, free resources and downloads. So in on the bookstores, it's not only the book, but I also have a lot of different CDs to help you. I actually have done some CDs for health reasons. You know, I do believe that our body, when we allow it to be, you know, be natural, it is a healer. Our body really knows how to take care of itself. We just tend to get in the way of it. We tend to think our way out of healthy behaviors sometimes, like breathing, like just letting ourselves heal. You know, I have a friend that just got out of surgery for a cancer surgery, and she's just having the most difficult time with just doing nothing. But the body needs to rest. It needs to take naps. You know, when we feel that, we have to listen to our body. And in some of the CDs, I teach you how to listen to the body.
Wow.
It's just, you know, so it's really, whether it's a health problem or whether it's a mental or psychological problem, I think listening to our body is really the key to getting us to a place of performing at our best.
Okay, so that's a foundational key, and I mean, that's amazing, because that's just something that is, you know, you would think, okay, well, we have to do something else, but you're telling us, no, wait, tune in, be present with yourself first, and then apply some of your techniques to changing that unconscious conditioning.
Yeah, I think so. I think we'd be amazed. I mean, when we do that, when we take some time to listen within our body, to our heart, to the various parts of our body, we'd be amazed at how much wisdom there is within us. You know, we all have the ability to stop the negative thinking, to help us. You know, some of us that have diagnosable disorders that are seeking help from professionals, it certainly is not as easy. Sometimes you need a little bit of help, because when we have, you know, for 40 plus years have been carrying a particular negative pattern, you can't simply expect to get rid of it simply by doing some of my techniques, because it's been ingrained. I mean, if you have something that's uncontrollable, many of the things you can take control of by just acknowledging the thought, releasing the thought and the feeling associated with it. But when you're talking about generalized anxiety disorder, or panic disorder, or major depression, those neural pathways have been pretty much ingrained. And the good thing about medication is it helps to shift those things. So you can actually get relief. And then some of my techniques will help just in the moment of changing a behavioral pattern.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Now, because we've been told stuff and caught some conditioning, that I think one of the terms for them is negative thoughts or false truths. Can you explain that a little bit about how can we recognize this stuff?
Because
it's just there sometimes below our conscious level of awareness. How do we start to bring it up?
Right. Well, the thing is, and great question, because a friend of mine, let me just start off by, I'm going to answer that question, but a friend of mine in Australia, he's a brain scientist and brilliant man, Evan Gordon, he does a lot of work on peak performance, working with the brain, and he says that there's five times more negative emotions in the brain than positive emotions. So our brain is naturally biased toward the negative. So I say that because I want to let people know that negative thinking, negative thought patterns is is part of who we are as human beings to a great extent. So it's not like you're bad because you're thinking this way or that you're different. So we have to recognize that just because of our culture and how we're raised, we tend to have more negative patterns of thought that are rather than positive. So the way we can bring awareness to these, and of course many of them are unconscious, so we don't even know we're negative. How many, I often say to people, how many times have you met somebody or somebody in your family or one of your friends that is very negative, but they're always so quick to identify people who are negative?
Yeah.
They talk about someone that's so judgmental, and they don't realize themselves that they're that way. Now, there's a couple of ways we can bring this to awareness. Number one, and this is work that's been done throughout time, when we can see a trait in another one, we have that same trait in ourselves, positive or negative. So if we're saying that person is really negative, and we keep on belaboring the point that person's just so negative, they're so judgmental, we can bet that we've got some of that pattern within ourselves.
Ah, so there's that old saying, takes one to know one.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the good news. There's also, I think that people also have to recognize when we look at someone and say, boy, they're brilliant. Look at how they're able to do this and that. They're able to accomplish that. There's also that part, that piece within us. So it
good.
Works both ways. So
okay.
Don't put yourself down too much if you think that you're if you're recognizing there may be negativity in you. Also recognize when you're complimenting someone on something, a great achievement, that you're capable of that too, because we're able to recognize it. Okay, now this is where a long way to answer your question. One of the ways we can bring awareness to our thought patterns is by how we behave and how we react. So if we're certainly if we're winning a race or winning a golf tournament or being promoted up the ladder in our career, then we're feeling pretty good and we're probably, that's working for us. But if we're finding ourselves working in a position and our colleagues are the ones that are being promoted, or we're playing in a sport and we find that our friends are always the ones that are getting noticed, we have to realize there's something that we're doing that's not working for us. Now, if you're so you can look at that, and you can look at what is it? Is there a fear that's provoking a behavior of holding yourself back and not taking that extra risk? Or is there a negative thought that says, if I were worthy of promotion, they would promote me? So there's a lot of times our thoughts hold us back and create a reaction. So I think looking at the way you're reacting can help you identify that negative thought. And I actually take you through that pretty clearly in the book. There's a chapter on identifying your, as I call it, conditioned identifications, or inventory your negative thinking.
Oh, the inventory of core conditioned identifications, chapter 10?
Yes, that's the chapter, and I think I take you through it pretty easily because I know it's sometimes difficult to address. I also even have a 24-hour exercise where I use my own self. This is about 6 years ago when
yeah.
I was first writing the book, and I used talk about the negative thoughts that were happening in my own head. And as embarrassing as that may seem to someone to think that they're exposing that, that's the only way we get beyond it. The only way we get beyond these thoughts is to identify it, write it down. And in the writing down of it, we're actually releasing it, Ken. And that's why the inventory is so important.
Okay, so if it's not written on paper, then it's kind of stuck inside of us.
Yeah, well, we might be able to. I think that writing it down on paper actually is part of the release. And if it's either stuck inside of us, or I think that we need to. We all talk about taking action. Well, writing something longhand, and I, And this is important because writing on the computer, as I wrote most of my book, is fine. But there's a different process that's activated when you're journaling with your longhand.
Oh.
That there's something that happens. It's a psychological dynamic that occurs when you're writing something down. So if you write down a thought that is negative and you feel inferior towards something, if you can write that down, you're becoming not only acknowledging it, aware of it, but you're releasing it through the writing. That's why journaling is so powerful. That's why
handwriting, not journaling. Onto a computer file.
Yes, right.
You say
right.
It takes it to a whole more effective step.
It is. I often suggest people, and even in the book, I say get a journal and get something that you kind of like, so that it becomes yours, and begin journaling. It's really a healthy way of releasing things within you that you don't really need to carry. Another thing is, a lot of people think when a memory comes up, if they have to figure it out, they have to wonder, they have to, analyze it. But really, and this is, I'm really about simplicity, and when a memory comes up, Ken, it's because it's ready to be released. If it's a negative memory that you've been holding, you may not even know the power of it, but if it comes up, it's because you're ready to release it. Now, if you don't release it and you're still working on it, then maybe you're not really ready to release it. But I think that we can, just by saying, oh, wow, I hadn't thought about that in a long time. You don't have to, you can say thank you and let it go.
Okay.
I often like the image of a bubble in your body, coming up from your feet, and it's this bubble of doubt. One of my things was I always struggle with self-doubt and comparing myself to others because I have three older brothers. So when I have a memory that was embarrassing or that was negative for me, and I just allow it to come up from my body, acknowledge it, and say, wow, and I let it go. And it feels beautiful. It feels lighter, and you feel more connected to yourself.
Okay. So when those things are coming up, it sounds like you're kind of viewing it or experiencing it with a little bit of detachment, of noticing it. How about that? So you're just kind of standing back and noticing it and allowing it to come up and just go, there it is. How about that?
If you feel like you're really tied to it, that's when you have to bring out your journal and start writing.
Okay.
Write
that's
about
that
it.
Step. If it doesn't, if it starts kind of getting real full of emotion or something.
Exactly.
That's the journal time.
And journal time is also the breathing time, because if you get yourself really into an emotional state over it, you're tying yourself to this condition, the conditioning, as I call it, which is, you mentioned it earlier, there's so many false truths that are part of our programming that just have us in their grip. And I think that when we recognize it as conditioning, we can work with it by journaling it, or we can breathe to the feeling within our body. If it's fear or anger or rejection or doubt, when we can start to identify where that exists in our body, we are almost finished with dealing with it, because we have brought it so much to awareness. Sometimes it takes journaling to get to that place.
Okay, so short of the journaling, in your book you'll explain more in detail about the specifics of the breathing techniques and breathing.
Oh, definitely.
With different emotions in there.
I do talk about breathing is a key practice in all of my work, because it really is it's a biochemical process. It's really, we can shift things within our body. And in fact, I'll tell you something that's not in my book right now, but it's something that I've been using in my talks, because I'm not constantly learning. I'm
sure.
Learning, reading, and sharing things with colleagues and going to conferences all the time. But there's a wonderful piece of research that comes from HeartMath, which is, I'm an affiliate, one-on-one provider for HeartMath up in Boulder Creek, California.
Yeah.
And they did some research on the experience of anger versus compassion. And what they found is that when you are experiencing anger in your body, and most of us know what that feels like. There's all kinds of jitteriness and energy and tension in our body.
Yeah.
When we're experiencing anger for 5 minutes, what that does, the result of that is it releases cortisol, that stress hormone, within our body for up to 5 to 6 hours.
Ooh.
Now I don't know if people know what cortisol does. Most people know it's the stress hormone, but it does a lot of really nasty stuff to our body. Number one, it constricts our vein, our blood flow, which of course causes hypertension. It speeds up the aging process. The literature that says is out right now. It talks about how we gain more weight when we eat under stress, so that we're not able to process our metabolism is shifted. So, but the good news. Okay, so that 5 minutes of anger. Now, on the other side, what they've documented is 5 minutes of a feeling of caring, compassion,
uh-huh,
or joy. Simply activating and sustaining that for just 5 minutes does the opposite. Number one, it stops the flow of cortisol throughout our body, and it releases this hormone that they call the vitality hormone. It's DHEA, and please don't ask me to tell you what that means.
Okay.
I keep forgetting that.
All right.
DHEA, you can Google just those initials,
sure.
DHEA.
Okay.
But that does the opposite. It stops the stress. It opens up the flow of the blood. It increases, it boosts the immune system. It slows the aging process down. It allows the body to metabolize fat more appropriately and distributes fat in our body. And a lot of bodybuilders actually take supplements of DHEA. But we can do this naturally. And what I love is the people, myself included, and my friends at HeartMath and folks who actually do this process and make it a part of their life.
Okay.
Well, anyway, the DHEA is amazing. So I just like to suggest that we incorporate that into our life, because we can just shift the biochemistry in our body.
Okay, and that's essentially, something simple about when you say life is what you make it. So
yes.
Here we are. If someone is thinking a lot about the problems and issues, then they're releasing chemicals that are dragging them down. And if they take time to find something to be grateful for, to be happy about, then all of a sudden they're actually doing healing work on themselves by having happy thoughts.
You bet they are.
And
not only happy thoughts, Ken, and this is really important, it's happy feelings.
Oh,
because we can have happy thoughts and not actually be experiencing it in our body. We have to activate that feeling. That's the key. In fact, on the free resources and downloads, I have a stress quiz, and it talks about just what I just said. So if anyone wants to have that in writing, they can just download that. And I give you a little stress quiz, the answers, and in the answers it talks about this DHEA and cortisol. But it really is important, and this is part of my struggle when I'm working with people and talking in groups and workshops, is to help them understand the difference between or the importance of feeling the sensation in the body, not just thinking, because the feeling is what really is the power.
Okay. So thoughts are a good place to start, but we got to take those thoughts and just make them so vivid and juicy and delicious that we're activating all those feelings.
Exactly.
I
mean, I think that when you think about The Secret and, in the Law of Attraction, I think that the essence of that is your guidance in your body, which is your feelings. When you're feeling joyful, you know, you're on the path that you should be on. I love that, because it's a beautiful guidance that you are where you're supposed to be. When you're feeling irritable and anxious, you know, that's not a good place to be. It, you know, maybe you have to do a million things that day, but stopping, taking a deep breath, and activating a positive feeling clears your mind and allows you to separate the essential from the non-essential, which we all have to do these days because there's so much to do. We can't do everything. We have to do the most important thing first. So, we can't think clearly when we're anxious. We have to stop, take a deep breath, activate a feeling of caring, and it changes the biochemistry, honestly, in our brain, and we're able to think more clearly, and we bring the best of ourselves to that moment.
Ah, okay. So here, you know, people that, myself, of many people, there's times where it's like in the midst of everything, I lose it. I may get upset unnecessarily, and I know there's a lot of folks out there dealing with over-responding to a situation. And so, to me, if I'm understanding correctly, you're giving us some of these hints in terms of, you know, follow this advice and get connected to the breathing, become deliberate about the breathing, use that as one of our stress relief tools, and then to go beyond that in your Snap Out of It Now book, that we can get at snapoutofitnow.com. Yes. By coincidence there.
Also on Amazon.com, I'd like to say you get a little bit more discount on Amazon, so either way is nice.
Okay, and of course then we still want to go to snapoutofitnow.com for the free goodies in the in the section there that says free resources and downloads. But it's like more is needed, that you're pointing out, in terms of your process here that helps us to know, we've got to, at some point, get to that conditioning, that hardwiring, and go through your process. So it's good to journal, it's good to breathe, and there's still more steps to do if I'm understanding correctly, to claim what I call dominion over our minds and over our feelings and over our lives.
Right, there is. But I think the breathing and acknowledgement, so it's cognitive and it's also bodily, you know, it's physiology.
Okay.
But the breathing allows us to take control of that. And in the moment, a deep breath can stop you, give you pause. I talk about stop, look, and listen. You know, we need to stop, look, and listen, sense what's going on. And with the breath, it can shift that. And shift us out of a mental process of overwhelm into a moment where we can have choice, where we can step forward and do what we know, if we're listening to our heart, what is most important for us. The four steps, okay, you did talk about that, but the first step is acknowledgement of the conditioning, the programming. This is the step basically is where you acknowledge that the truth that have been holding you back are really nothing more than thoughts or attitudes that have been hardwired in. You know, I often say they're not fleeting. A lot of us think they're just fleeting thoughts. Well, if we have a thought and we've had it more than twice, we can bet that that's probably a hardwired thought and if it's negative, we need to release that. We need to unplug that thought from our physiology because our thoughts and our feelings live in our body. And I know that we're probably coming up to the end of this talk today, but I do really talk about that and Snap Out of It Now.
Okay.
And I'm also loving talk and speaking. So if anyone out there has a company that needs to have somebody come in and do a talk or a workshop, I'm always happy to do that with new people and explain what I'm talking about more carefully and specifically because of the issues.
Okay, now is it okay to give out your 800 number?
You bet. Yes. Like, Snap Out of It Now or 800-753-1417.
Okay, great. So that way people can get in touch with you and learn about this, because I know, just like here, Chapter 7, conditioned reaction, the tangible reinforcement of our conditioned reality. So I am excited to I've just brought your book to the top of my reading list.
Oh, great, Ken.
And I want to encourage all my listeners and people that listen to the archive later on of this program, go to snapoutofitnow.com, get the free goodies, and order her book so that you can deliberately connect to yourself in a loving way, connect to simple processes, just like the breathing, in a more deliberate way than you've ever done, and find out that you could save a whole lot of money. And I'm going to encourage Dr. Adrienne Ahern to start an investment club, because if you go to her versus standard therapy, in my opinion, you could save thousands upon thousands of dollars, and then what are you going to do with that extra money that you're not spending on traditional therapy? Well...
I also want to say, though, sometimes we do need help and we need a guide. And I think that therapists, I was a therapist for many years, and I know that there's some wonderful, caring, loving people that are very in touch with themselves and know how to facilitate release of negative patterns. So I'm not suggesting not going to therapy, but for those of you who feel comfortable and feel capable of doing it on your own or working in a group to do it, I think that I've laid it out pretty practically and simply, and if you have any questions, I'm always available to answer those. You can contact me through the website or on my 800 number, 800-753-1417 again.
Dr. Ahern, we just want to take time and thank you for being so generous in your busy schedule to share this with our beloved listeners.
My pleasure. This is my path, and I'm just so grateful that I'm able to do this and share and be available to help others find their path and live their path with excellence. You know, I think that's what we're really all wanting to do.
Yes, absolutely. And now we have the Snap Out of It Now, a pathway that for many of us is going to make our journey to happier living much more easy. With that, I just say thank you. Thank you, Dr. Ahern. Thank you, beloved listeners, and wishing you just the happiest holidays, and inviting all of my listeners to tell your friends, tune in next week for more advanced living fun at Advanced Living Radio here. Invite you to view my website, advancedliving.com, where we have some goodies to help make your life easy also. In the meantime, God bless you all. Let's go out.